Science on Surfaces.
So welcome to this podcast. Today we will talk about nanomedicines. And we will talk about what nanomedicines are and how they differ from traditional medicines. So today's guest is Dr. Gustav Emilsson. Gustav is working as a postdoc with nanomedicine development at the Department of Advanced Drug Delivery in Pharmaceutical Science at AstraZeneca, which is a global science-led pharmaceutical company. So welcome, Gustav.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you here and to learn more about this exciting topic. So could you just start with the basics of what a nanomedicine is?
Okay, so the basics, or my view of the basics, is that a nanomedicine is something that is, it has one dimension at least in the nanoscale range. So you have either like, when you have some sort of particle it will have one dimension between 1 and 100 nanometers. And in, or it will have at least it will show properties that are related to its size, and even if it sometimes it might have a dimension that is maybe above nanometers, so it could be a micrometer, but it still shows properties that is related to its size as well, like to nanometer size. And it is composed of many different things. So like anything that you can actually make into a nano-sized object, you could then perhaps use as some sort of medicine or sort of a container for a medicine in that case.
Mm-hmm. But if you take the, if you compare it to what we would call like a traditional drug or medicine, those could also be in the nanoscale, I guess. You would have an active molecule that would also be in the nanoscale, but that wouldn't qualify as a nanomedicine.
No, I think it's a difficult definition. I think the definition is still a bit, there's not a single one definition, I think. So there's room for interpretation probably, but I think that many people think that it is some sort of, you have done something. It's not just one molecule. Usually it's like you're doing some sort of complexation, or you're mixing different things to create some sort of new carrier maybe. So it's not just one thing, but usually like that you have either maybe a container and then you fill this or whatever with some sort of drug, or that you have, I would say that it's composed of more than one component at least.
So it's like a more of a complex design, a carrier with a more complex design than just one single molecule.
I think in general, yes, that it can be. I mean, it can also be that it's a nanoparticle in a certain size range, and then depending on what you want to, maybe that like it's a nanoparticle made up of some sort of material, and of course that material could also maybe be found as a salt or something, but now we made it into like a certain shape or a size range that is suitable for what we want to do with it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what is then special with this category of medicines?
Yeah, I think what is special is that you can try to, when you make it into this size range, you can see then, like, you can gain new properties, so you can gain new ways of working with medicines. Like, for example, there has been recently quite approved drugs that where you have a container, in this case like a liposome, and inside of this liposome you can then have like a combination of drugs. So you don't just have one drug, but you have like a cocktail of two drugs.
And what is liposome for those who don't know that?
Yes, a liposome is a lipid encased volume of a liquid. So you have this liposome, and then they have a shell, and in the inside it could be filled with some liquid, and it's sort of similar to what you would find in cells. You have like this lipid tails, and then you have a hydrophilic end, and you have a hydrophobic end, and then they create this lipid bilayer that will then enclose into like a sort of spherical form. Mm. So you will have a liquid inside and liquid outside.
And so it's a spherical container that you can fill with stuff.
Yes. Yes, basically. In principle. Yeah, exactly. So it could contain something. And then in this, for example, some recent, I mean, it's quite prominent, I would say, in the what you would call nanomedicine. There's a lot of liposomal drugs being investigated, and also some have been approved. And I mean, when you put something in a container, you can then make sure that what you have inside there is then. I mean, you can find new things, like say that you know that, or you find out that if we deliver these two drugs at the same time or at a certain ratio, they have to be delivered like within a certain time frame, or they have maybe different characteristics that makes it impossible to do it if they are not in the same container. Then you can then, for example, use this sort of container. So you put them in the container, and then wherever the container goes, when it's released, it will be released at the same time. Then you can probably gain new effects that you would not be able to do with just injecting these two things at the same time.
So it's a way to both package drug molecules and deliver them to a specific site.
Yes, in the best of cases, yes.
Yeah, okay. And what did you say about that they have now? They've had used a mix of different molecules in the liposome or in the vesicle. Is that something that is new, or is this?
I think it's quite new. There was it was approved by the FDA for I think 3 years ago, and I'm not sure. I think this was one of the first where they showed that this concept, where you actually take two different drugs and you have them in the same containers, let's say, and then when they are co-delivered, then they have a increased efficiency, and it can also then, when this increase then leads that you can have you just need a lower dose compared to if they would not be delivered at the same time.
Okay. And
this is often what you want to achieve. You want to sort of, I mean, in a perfect world, you would inject a nanomedicine and it would only go to the place where you want it. And then you would then be able to, if you can get a local concentration where you want it, for example, in a certain organ, and then you could reduce the amount of drug that you would inject compared to just injecting it by itself. And then you can avoid certain toxic effects, and you can increase the range, or like you can change sort of the way that we deliver.
Okay, so how do you make it go to just the site where you want it then?
Yeah, I think that's still debated if you can, but you can, at least now you can see that there will be a difference if you just have the medicine or the drug or whatever you want to call it, and you inject that, then you will have it distributed in a certain way. And then if you have it encapsulated in something, it will most likely distribute in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And if this is then the way that you would want it to, then it can be beneficial. And I mean, there's also people looking into using different like targeting ligands so that you can actually modify this. If you say, for example, a liposome, and you modify the outer layer with something that will bind to a certain receptor, you can then hopefully get that to bind in an even higher degree to where you want it and less to the other area.
So ligand is a molecule that you basically put on top of the membrane, or how would you explain that?
It's something that you, for example, if you have a cell and this cell has certain receptors, so it has certain proteins that is sticking out of this membrane, and then you know, or you find out that if you can design something that binds to one of these receptors,
mm-hmm.
and then you put the thing that binds to this receptor on the outside, on the surface of your carrier, then hopefully it will interact with this receptor and stay there, and maybe also get internalized, so it gets taken in by cells, and then you can deliver your cargo to where you want it to be. And then, of course, if there are different cells, and some cells might have this receptor in a higher abundance than others, you can use this as a way to try to target or get more of what you want to where you want.
And this works today.
I don't know if it actually, I think it's debated whether or not I think this is like the dream. So you would, you in a perfect world, you would have a, you would have a carrier and would be modified in such a way that it would only bind to a certain place, and then when you inject it, it only goes there. But in reality, I think it's something that we're striving for. But I think that would be the ideal goal, to have it only go to one place. But of course, it's very difficult and challenging to achieve.
So you mentioned that you could use a liposome as a carrier.
Yes.
Are there other materials that you could use as well, or other packages that you could use to transport the drugs?
Yes, there are quite a few. I mean, there are. When you think about the carrier, it could be that the carrier could either be like a liposome, or it could be some sort of polymeric carrier or shell. There's also something called dendrimers, which are quite small, and then they are actually like binding the drug, and then there's a quite a wide range. Even if we are in nanosame range, we can have something that is maybe 5 nanometers, or we can have something that's 100 nanometers, which is still, if you just look at that scale, it's quite a big difference. And when working with them, it's also different, but the goal is the same. And I mean, there's polymeric, and you can have a protein bound particles, for example. You can use, since the definition is quite wide, what is a carrier, but in somehow you can modify your material with something that enhances it or changes its properties. You have, for example, drug nanocrystals, which I also been working with, and then you have certain cases where you actually modify the surface of these with a protein.
So what is the drug nanocrystal, or what is, I mean, how?
A drug nanocrystal is a drug that has been crystallized. So it's composed of purely the active compound that you want to deliver. So it's a small molecule, as we call it. And then this can then be made into like a nano-sized crystal, so to say.
So there is no wrapping outside of this?
There is not as extensive as a container. You could say that you have something on the surface to stabilize it. I don't know if I would call it a container. I would say it's more like a some sort of shell maybe, but it's not like, it's less that you have it, because since it's in this case the drug itself is what is the nano. And then you have to change the properties of the surface. Traditionally this is done for poorly soluble drugs. You can have something that is, you find out that it is very active, or it would probably bind to where you want it, but it's very poorly soluble, so it, if you give it to someone, it will dissolve at such a slow rate that it will not be really feasible to use it. And then if you make it into a much smaller size, then the dissolution rate will increase, and it will actually be usable. And then but it can also then be combined with sometimes different solubilizing agents or oils, and then the problem can be that maybe the substance that you give it is not, it's not what is the most toxic, but actually what you are using to solubilize it with might be the toxic component.
So you said that you make it into a smaller size and that makes it more soluble?
Yes, a smaller compared to if you would think about it as a powder that you usually, you might, this might be in the micro range. And when you make it smaller, you make it into what is nano then. So.
Okay, but you, in the end, you want it to be like single molecules.
Yes.
I guess, yeah.
Yes, but, it's composed of it, yes.
Yeah, so you pack those molecules that are the active substance into something bigger, which is a crystal. And then that will dissolve in the end, or how does it work? Yeah.
You have these small molecules, and then people that know these things, they know how to crystallize them. So you can make this small molecule into crystal, sort of like, if you think about like when you make a crystal for X-ray crystallography, then you have a protein that you can manage to make into crystal, but you can also then manage to make a small molecule into crystal. And this crystal can then later be, this crystal can then be big. It could be micron sized or quite large, and then it's too big. So then you try to minimize it by either mechanically grinding it down or producing it in such a way that it actually becomes a nano size.
Okay.
But in the end, it will dissolve. And then when it dissolves, it will be, what you have is these small molecules.
So you tailor the size of this crystal. How do you decide how big the crystal should be then? Or do you want to make it as small as possible?
I think if you just wanted to dissolve fast, you would want it to be as small as possible. But it's I think it's always a compromise between, you want it to also be stable so that what you have produced would not change over time. So it might say that you make it very small and you would notice that it somehow tends to increase in size. Maybe it's better to make it not as small, but it's somehow, I think, also difficult to control exactly what size you get.
So when you say get bigger, they would aggregate then, or how would they get bigger?
Yeah, maybe aggregate or go, or depending, I guess, if you make it into a stable crystal, nano crystal, it should not aggregate. It should be that size. But I think in general, if you just wanted to dissolve faster, you would, smaller the better. But it will be what we call a nano suspension. So you will have these crystals then suspended in a liquid medium. And then each crystal will be stabilized by something on the surface that prevents them from aggregating. And this something can be polymers or proteins or something.
And what you put on the surface will not prevent them from dissolving later in the body?
No. I mean, maybe you could create a shell that is so thick or impenetrable that it would. But I think that would also be interesting as a technique. If you could do that, it would be, of course, interesting that you could, if you could fine tune this shell, then you could maybe control the dissolution rate in a very precise manner.
So what is then the benefits of the nanocrystal if you compare to just taking those molecules and putting them inside a vesicle and deliver them with a vesicle instead?
I think that the benefit here is that you have a quite, not to say, yeah, sort of simple system, because it's traditionally, when you, from my understanding, when you want a drug to be approved by certain organizations, then you go through all these steps, and the less complex of a formulation you have, I mean, the less things that you have to check for.
Right.
And in this nanocrystal, then, since you are, your drug delivery or your nano object is made of pure drug, you are removing a lot of components. So if you have for example a liposome, then you also have to check all of these things. Like, I mean, then you have something inside, but maybe you even, I mean, you have more components that are not a drug than what is the drug. And you in a liposome, you will not reach the same drug loading as a crystal. I mean, a crystal is composed of 100% of this molecule, so it has you cannot really achieve a higher drug loading in a liposome. I'm not sure what you would get, but it will not be 100% for sure, because it would be a liquid container with these molecules, so it would be much lower.
Right, so more complicated to predict the exact behavior of all the parts of a liposome carrier then.
Yes, there may be more characterizations that has been done and shown to different agencies to show that it is working. Like, you have to show, I guess, that each component is stable, not breaking down. But then if you have fewer components, you have less things that you have to check for.
Okay. So I'm thinking a bit more about the design. So what parameters can you vary in this nanomedicine design? You've mentioned the contents and the coating and the wrapping and molecules on top, and it seems like you can vary many different things and really get a very intricate design in the end.
Yes, I think this is both the advantage and also the the challenge, because you have a lot of parameters that you can vary. I mean, as you said, you can vary the size, for example, or we can vary the surface chemistry, which my background is sort of a surface background. So I mean, when I think about it as a problem, of course, everything that you will be injected as some sort of particle will be an interface. You have some sort of interface that will be recognized by the body or somehow. And of course, then you are, when you make this something to a nano size, then you are increasing the area per volume. So you have, compared to micro size, you have the importance of the surface becomes more important. So you have to be really like, you can tailor then hopefully the surface chemistry or the charge or the like what molecule, like what type of polymers are put on the surface or what kind of proteins are on the surface. And then once these go into the body, then they will start to accumulate proteins and you will get like a, I'd say, biological profile for them, maybe which proteins they interact with. And of course, then it's a very like multi-layered complex problem.
So this is the protein corona you're talking about?
Yes.
So could you describe that a bit more? Because that's a kind of a, like a challenge to handle, if I understand correctly, that you will always get this accumulation of proteins or possibly other molecules as well, I don't know, on the surface when you insert the drug into the body or any nano-sized object or any foreign object, maybe even in the body, you will have an accumulation on the surface of proteins, right?
Yes, yeah. I'm not an expert in this area, but from my understanding that's exactly what it is. It's like you, anything that is interested in the body will most likely absorb proteins, and that which type of proteins that are absorbed will depend on then the surface of this, I would say the surface of this particle, but that is what is facing the solution, right? So if you have a surface and you have something inside, then what is on the surface should be the main component, and then that determines this corona formation, and this will also maybe change over time, that you have it in the beginning you have a certain proteins absorbing and then they are exchanged, or then in the end you might get some stable corona. But I think this is like a dynamic process, and so finding out exactly what proteins and why, I mean, I think you can, a lot of people now they you can find out, like you can do this experiment and you can show that these proteins are the ones that bind, but then the question is why are they binding? It's mm-hmm. very difficult to figure out, and what is the implication then? If you have mm-hmm. this protein X on the surface, what will that lead to in the end?
Mm. So is there some way that you can prevent proteins from binding?
Yeah, I mean, this is also, I think, so from my experience, I mean, usually polymers or a hydrophilic layer on the surface, of, if you look at like polymer theory or whatever you want to call it, then it suggests that if you can create a dense enough layer of polymer chains on top of a surface, then it should be, in principle, a barrier for entry of protein. So if you have a dense enough layer or a thick enough layer, it will prevent absorption of proteins. And then, in theory, you are usually thinking of proteins as some sort of sphere or rod, and you try to calculate this. And of course, it's an approximation, but it's still, you try to show that if you have this hydrophilic, like a brush, in order to actually reach the surface, then the particle or the protein would have to compress this polymer. And compressing this polymer is not favorable. Mm. Because if you have a polymer chains at a very, they are very close to each other. They are so close that they cannot really pack it like they would like to be. Like a chain, any chain, or like a string, it would like to be in any, all over the place. It would not want to be like a straight line, mm-hmm. because that's not the entropically favored way. But if you have managed to pack them in such a way that they are in this string-like way, then they would not want to be any closer to each other. So when a protein tries to approach and then has to make them sort of move even closer to each other, that will be then like a repulsive, like a spring, sort of, to try to prevent them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's, I mean, I'm not sure, it's difficult to say. I mean, there's a lot of people doing surfaces that are quite resistant to proteins. And then, and I mean, that's where I come from in the beginning. But then you have another world, sort of like where we talk about that there's always corona forming, and I think it's it's difficult to know what is true, and maybe because it's maybe what we do in sometimes in surface science, and we have a perfect surface and we can clean it and we can make sure that it is a perfect surface. But when you work with nanoparticles, it might be this polymer might not be as dense as you can do on a surface. You might be able to achieve much higher densities and different other way. I mean, a very pure surface, this might not be possible.
Yeah, exactly. So would you have both this, the polymer brush and ligands that will target the nanomedicines? I mean, could they be combined, or would you have to go for one or the other?
No, you could have both. You could have a polymer brush or a polymer layer, and then ideally you would then have this ligand would then be on some polymer chain that is sticking out slightly longer.
Okay. Of course.
I would at least suggest because if it's otherwise, it might be less accessible. So you would preferably want your ligand to be protruding or like at a further end of your particles, I would say. But you, this is what people want to do. I mean, because you want to, if you have nothing, like if you have no polymer or stabilization of the particle, then they will not be very long lived in the circulation. So you have to have something on the surface to prevent the particles from actually being removed by the body, because they are foreign, so they should not really want to be there, or they shouldn't be there.
Okay, so they will be removed by the immune system or something, or yes, what happens?
There's this clearance, or if you inject nanoparticles, there's a clearance of them, and then depending on, there's papers showing that depending on, for example, how much polymer you attach to a surface, then you will have a faster or slower clearance. And then exactly where this threshold is, of course, difficult to say, because it might depend on what type of particle you have. But you will have probably some threshold where if you are above a certain limit, your particles will have a substantially longer circulation time compared to if you are below this threshold. And then this threshold, I mean, it's sort of like a clearance. When we talk about clearance, it's mainly like the liver, maybe, and the spleen, and different organs in the body that are responsible for, I mean, keeping us safe or healthy, or whatever you want to call it. And of course, if something is foreign, this will be recognized and taken up by these organs trying to clear it out.
Okay. Yeah, so there are quite many challenges here, I would say. So are there any specific diseases that these are most suitable to treat, or could it be any type of disease that you would use this?
I think that they are opening up a landscape for maybe diseases that have not been previously, you could not treat them. You have recent examples of an siRNA, so a nucleic acid delivered. It's possible then to treat like a hereditary disease that has not been possible previously. And this is then done by, because you then package this nucleic acid in a container. And this packing of this, the container is both like a way to deliver, but it's also a way to protect whatever you want to deliver. So in case of these nucleic acids, then they are quite prone to degradation. If you would just inject it, it would degrade by different RNAs or things found in your body that wants to break it down. But if you pack it into a particle, this particle then can protect it from being degraded. So it actually enables then certain maybe nucleic acid type of drugs. And this one recently was for, it was siRNA, so it's a small interfering RNA. So it tries to lower the amount of proteins produced. And this was recently, there was one called Onpattro. It was approved 2 years ago, I think. And its role is then to actually lower the amount of a certain protein that is produced, and because this protein when it is produced in someone who has this hereditary disease, it is produced in maybe higher levels, or it has a mutation that causes problems. And this production then leads to aggregation of these proteins in this person's system, which leads to different problems. And in Sweden, it's called Skellefteåsjukan, I think.
Okay, never heard of it.
No, but it is like a hereditary disease, and it's not, I mean, maybe not the I would say, biggest mark, but it is a very specialized treatment, and it has, I mean, so I think that the genetic medicine provides new ways to work with certain types of drugs or medicines that have not been possible previously. Mm-hmm. You were opening up like an area which has previously been untreatable, maybe, and making it treatable.
Mm. Okay, so, I mean, considering all the different challenges that you would have to overcome making this, I mean, I guess there should be like a big reward to develop it and sell it, I guess, and to treat something that is previously uncurable would be, of course, good motivation for it. And you said that this was approved 2 years ago or something?
I think it was 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, in 2018.
Yeah. So there are quite a number of these already in the market, or...
From a recent review that I read, and then they say that there's roughly 50 or more formulations currently in the market that are sort of in the nano area. Mm. And then there are more than 400 ongoing clinical trials.
So there's
a lot of research going in, but of course, all of them might not make it, but there's a lot of, at least I think, hopes, and maybe... I mean, since one has, if this 2 years ago then was approved, it opens up that maybe more might be approved, and you see that there's actually because this is based on nucleic acids, so you're trying to prevent the production of something in this person's body.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you know that you have, for example, another disease that is also causing, like, you know that you have problems because you have overproduction or you have production of certain protein, then in principle, at least, if you know how to shut down one thing, if you can then just deliver this another nucleic acid that then binds to this other gene,
mm-hmm.
In that place, you could maybe shut down the production of a different protein. So this opens up like a way to actually regulate or try to cure or treat at least these diseases that are...
So you're saying that one would then reuse the packaging and the coatings and all those different things in the intricate design, but then replace what's inside, like the active molecule inside the carrier? Or
I think that would be the ideal case. I mean, it will probably not work for all, because it's, I mean, for if they are similar enough, it might work. But then in the end, it comes down to also where they have to be. I think this case in the case of this one that I talked about, then it was, this protein was primarily made in the liver, so you have to get these particles then to the liver, and I mean the liver in itself will accumulate particles, and that's one thing that you might if you want it to go somewhere else than the liver, you will want it to avoid going there. So it's also one challenge. I mean, hopefully you can then package it in the same way. And then in the end, if you wanted to go to somewhere else than the liver, you would have to also face that challenge.
Mm-hmm. But I'm thinking, because you mentioned there are so many parameters that you can tweak and change in terms of like the whole design of this nanomedicine. So I was thinking that maybe if you could come up with, 10 different combinations of designs or something, and they could be reused as carriers for lots of different drugs, or how many, I mean, to behave in a certain way, to be cleared like in the same location, and all the things that you would like to obtain, and maybe then it would be easier to characterize and to get that approved if sort of the carrier design had already been approved. But I don't know if it's that straightforward to just reuse something that you've gotten approved before. But
I don't know either, actually. I mean, I'm not really fully into the regulatory part of this, but it's from my understanding, it's still very complicated to get something approved. But I mean, the more things that get approved, I'm assuming that it will pave the way for similar, at least, treatments. So if you, for example, liposomal, I mean, there's quite a few of the liposomal ones, and I guess there that they are in somehow quite similar, because you have, at least you have this liposome. It can of course maybe be composed of different lipids or something, but it's in the end, they have to sort of, I think you have to, yeah, but I think it's also that it's a new sort of landscape for approval. So you have to, I think it's from both ways. Like, you don't really know what will be asked of you and what kind of characterization you're supposed to give them in order for it to be approved in such a way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So that's a challenge. Are there any other challenges related to this in terms of in developing and getting through approval and get it out?
I think it's still it's a lot of challenges. For example, there's still a large portion of what you inject that actually doesn't end up where you want it, even if you're changing, that it doesn't go in the same way as the free molecule or drug. It still has some sort of preference for certain organs, and maybe that it's cleared or it's in high, like in the liver, for example. And I think this is still of course you would want it to, if you don't want it to go to the liver, you would want to be able to make sure that it doesn't go there. And I think that's a challenge, because if you just think about like evolution or the human body or animals in general, we have evolved to try to avoid different foreign things hurting us. And then of course we have developed some sort of way to handle all these things, and then what we are actually doing here in the nanoscale of these are in the same range as like a virus or something. So we might have like a very efficient way to remove things, because we pathogens or things that we know would be harmful for us, and then now we are trying to be in the same sort of ballpark as those things that the body has tried to avoid. And it's a very complicated, I mean, it could also be, you know, variations from everyone, even if everyone looks exactly the same on that side, it might be also like personalized medicine, or that you have to think about like each person, individual.
So you're saying in theory it could be that it works, a particular nanomedicine works better in one individual than in another, because their immune system differs.
I wouldn't
exclude in theory
possibility though, of that happening.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yes. And also if you think about it, it's a long, I think people are thinking that it's quite a long way. I mean, the liposomes were first, like from the first like invention, or whatever you want to call it, of liposomes, was sort of, it took around 30 years to actually get the first liposomal drug on the market.
So when was this?
I think the first one that liposomal, or in the US, was approved was in 1995.
Okay.
And around 30 years prior to that, it was like when liposome started to become like a thing, I guess. And then so you have like 30 years of research going into different ways of understanding just this liposome, and then of course also making the actual drug is a totally different thing as well. But I mean, everything takes time, and if we have a new carrier, maybe we would have to be realistic and think that okay, maybe 30 years is it's not unreasonable to think that 30 years, like, and of course, but since we're seeing approval of new types of nanomedicines, I think that there's still like a large potential, but there's still a lot of things that would have to be you always want more understanding, right? It's even if you can get something approved, it could be possible to make it maybe even better if you would know the things that you don't know today.
Mm-hmm.
It's continuous improvement.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I could just, I mean, it's difficult to maybe characterize how it behaves in the body and get an understanding of that. But then I'm also thinking about challenges of, manufacturing small entities that are s with such an intricate design
Yes.
and have them be stable over time so that you can store them and know that they still behave that they're supposed to in a year or however long the shelf life is supposed to be. I mean, there are so many tricky aspects here
Yes.
that I can, I mean, of course, they are included in the characterization before the approval,
Yeah.
but still, yeah.
I think you're right. I mean, for example, if you in academia, or if you think about it, maybe you develop a new way to create a nanoparticle, but then in reality, it could be that this way maybe is not really possible to scale up. So if you want to do it in an industrial scale, I mean, okay, maybe in a lab somewhere in the university, it's fine to create a few microliters, but when you want to start creating milliliters or liters of the same thing, maybe you have to think about, is this actually feasible to do in a time frame that is actually So it's a lot of like scaling up challenges, of course, exists, and I think that's the thing that pharmaceutical companies probably struggle with and trying to create new ways.
But it still sounds like this. It's still, I mean, it will continue. I mean, it's not an area that will sort of die out, even though all the like the challenges, it's, I mean, it's here to stay and we will keep working with it. It sounds like, right?
I think so. I mean, yeah, you always want to. I mean, science always try to push forward, right? So you will not just one day say stop and say no, we are satisfied with what we have today. And I mean,
No.
they will always be like continuous improvement. And people always want something like, if you can cure disease X, you then want to cure disease Y, and so on. So there will always be a continuous struggle, I think, for improvement of what we know today. And I think, at least in my view, even if there are challenges, of course, there's still a lot of potential that overcomes possibly this challenge. And I don't see, I mean, I guess it could be a definition if there's something else that also, but I mean, I think right now there's shown promise for certain, like, I mean, the field of sort of delivering biologics or nucleic acids or proteins are also showing promise with these type of nano-sized carriers. And that it's also just starting, I would say. I think there's a lot of
Okay.
things.
Yeah. So I think that's what we wanted to cover in this episode. Very fascinating area, I think, and really looking forward to what we will be seeing with the next within the next 30 years then. I hope we will make some progress. So thank you so much for listening to this episode with me, Malin Edvardsson, and Dr. Gustav Emilsson from AstraZeneca. And I would also like to take the opportunity to mention to those who are listening or watching that if you're interested in surface science and related topics, you should check out our blog, the Surface Science blog. Thank you.